Captain Finch, Reel 2. Why were the officers in India so wonderful, in your opinion?
Well, I think mainly because there was nothing to do outside except the regiment or sport. Admitted, some of the officers who could afford it to ride their own horses and played polo, but a lot of them who couldn't afford horses, we used to all play together, hockey together, even football. And that's what made them, although there was officers, they were so friendly with us. There was none of the, what you call, beating down of anybody. They were all friendly together as a family, especially in the inside the regiment.
Were you ever called out to deal with the riots whilst you were in India?
Never called out to deal with the riot, whatever. I can't ever remember being called out for a riot. Or ever having had one near us.
So you weren't engaged in any actual operations whilst you were in India?
No, never.
But I think you were telling me that whilst you were in India, you were present whilst two earthquakes occurred.
Yes. When we were at Dinapur, there was a big earthquake. I think the centre of it was at Muzaffarpur, and at Dinapur the river went away at one place and came up at another, and I went from our unit lines towards my home to make sure my wife and family were all right, and we lived in a block of houses, of four houses. When I arrived there, my wife was already out the back way, and she said, "Oh, my baby," and I ran indoors and got my baby out and brought it out to her. My next door neighbour, who was my company sergeant major, he wasn't there, but his house, which was on the end, the whole of the end wall had fell out over, so you could look straight into every room of his and see it from the outside. And while we stood there looking at us, his wife burst out laughing, and so did we. He came up and he said, "I don't know what you can see to laugh at." So he said it was no good of crying over. But that was the Muzaffarpur one. I mean, there was nobody hurt or injured of the troops at all. Because the native houses, they suffered more than we did, because they was, as you might say, so ramshackle, and, you know, straw roofs and all like that. They just collapsed. And then the other earthquake, I was acting brigade quartermaster sergeant away from the regiment, and we were going up to north of Quetta for a series of exercises, mainly without troops, although there were a few troops, of course, with you. They called it a tactical exercise without troops. And just as we were going into Quetta, felt the train start shaking and it pulled up. And we was in this earthquake, was in the outskirts of it. And then we found there was a stream had come underneath the train.
You mean it had been diverted by the earthquake?
Yes, so the train didn't move. So at last what they decided to do was unhitch the train at the point where the water came underneath, pull the front lot away. So it was all right, they did that. So then they decided they would unhitch one truck at a time and the remainder, and carriage at a time of the remainder, and see if, as it was sloping away from us, if we two people could push it across, walking on the rails. And that's what we were doing. And I'll never forget, there was a nurse travelling in our carriage, and she's from the Quetta Soldiers Hospital. She came to me, "Mr. Finch," she said, "how can I get across?" You eat there, my dear, till I go, and I'll see as you get across. Well, I went across with the last carriage, put a kit on the carriage, and she did the same as the soldiers done. She walked on this rail. I told her, I said, if you find yourself slipping, hang on to the carriage. And I walked on this rail, and we pushed the carriages across. And we're up into Quetta, and I tell you, they had a fine old doing Quetta. The houses were down, and all the native quarters were down as well. But it's a wonderful experience being in an earthquake, to feel the... And of course, for days afterwards, you get little tremors, and you wonder whether it's going to be a serious one or not. But it's a wonderful experience, all the same.
So when you were on, that train that you were on wasn't derailed by the earthquake?
No.
How far were you from Quetta?
Oh, I think about 4 miles, if I remember right. My memory might be wrong, but it was about 4 miles or no.
Was there panic on the train?
No. In fact, there were nearly all officers on this train, because, as I say, we were going on this tactical exercise, and they took it very calmly. Very calmly. We were very fortunate to get able to get across like we did.
Can you tell me about the clothing which you had in India? Did you have special clothing?
Yes, we had a khaki drill, and in the daytime we used to wear shorts, in the evening we used to wear long trousers with it. In the daytime you'd wear a khaki shirt, and at night time, of course, you'd put a tunic on over it. In the winter time, you used to wear long trousers instead of shorts, if it was cold weather, but nearly always you could wear the shorts. But in the winter time, in the evenings, you used to have your ordinary khaki clothing to wear, with a cardigan if you wanted it, because according to where you were, different places, it was colder than what it was. See if you could, if you happened to go up to the hill stations, towards the hill stations, it's very cold.
What did you wear on your heads?
Topi in the summertime, but in the winter time, same as we used to wear in China, if it was in the evening, like a fur hat with a regimental number in the front.
A fur hat?
Fur hat. We wore those in China as well. We brought them to India with us, and we used to wear them in the winter at night in India.
What kind of fur was that made out of?
I forget now. I forgot my name somewhere, I think, still. Or one of my sons does. And here's a very smooth fur. I can't remember, I'm sure. No, okay. Sorry.
When you had... in the evenings, did you ever dine in the sergeant's mess?
Every now and then we used to have a sergeant's mess dinner, and even our wives used to go with us two or three times a year.
How did you have to dress for that?
Well, we had to have our full uniform on, and later in India we had the reds and the blue trousers. We got the reds where to buy, of course.
Red jackets.
But before that, it was blue patrols, as we used to call it. It was the evening dress, if you went to a dinner.
What did the blue patrols consist of?
Blue trousers with a red stripe up the side, and a blue tunic with colour stars on the side. Very smart. And the hat that went with them for evening wear, because you'd have to put a topi on during the day, was a blue side hat.
Like a Glengarry?
Glengarry, yes, Glengarry.
Did you use the sergeant's mess very much as a married man?
Oh, yes, nearly every night for half an hour, even if probably longer, if you were going to, especially if you're going to have a game of billiards. And I was a billiard fan. In fact, I won the Army Championship.
And But most of the people who were using the mess would have been bachelors, of course, I suppose.
Oh, yes. Yes, and a good 80% was bachelors. Yes, definitely. The RSM and all the time ages, yes, they were all married. But they all used to go in there in the evening for a while, probably one or two, no more. And I mean, there was no heavy drinking. But they all used to go in and attend the sounds mess and used to think a lot of it. And as I say, there was a billiard table as well. We always had a billiard table.
Were women allowed into the sergeant's mess?
Only at different functions, not daily. No. Never.
And were there many rules and regulations in the sergeant's mess? Or could you be free and easy?
You used to have a rule book which you had to abide by. In fact, I've got a couple of them at home now. But there's nothing that you wouldn't do normally. If you behave yourself normally, you didn't have to look at a rule book.
What type of rules did they have, can you remember?
Only that behave yourself, not have too much to drink, no ladies are allowed in, and the times of opening and shutting, really, or times you'd have to leave. There was nothing really harsh about them at all.
You didn't have rules banning swearing or anything like that?
Oh, yes. Yes, you weren't allowed to use bad language in this. But there was nothing out the way, as some people try to think. I mean, you could have a good, enjoyable life with them.
Did you have things on display in the mess to do with the regiment?
Yes. Cap badges have gone by days, and photos of all over wherever you'd been. Yes. They're very, very good. And as I say now, there's one in Beverly, it's very well worth seeing.
And silver, did you have silver?
Yes. And that's gone to Beverly. What's name? The silver we had in the mess. We had a very, very large collection of silver won all over the world. I have two nice big cups that I won at billiards. They've given me mine now, as it happens, when they closed the museum in the Beverly Barracks, which is now closed, the Beverly Barracks, been standing idle for years, and put all the stuff in the museum in the town, which is run by the regiment. They gave me my two silver cups. I was very pleased to have them. But my medals, they are in the museum, giving them back to the regiment.
Were there any special customs or ceremonies which you had in the mess?
Nothing out of the way, really. No.
Was a lot of attention paid to health and sanitation?
Yes. Very. Especially sanitation. And we had sanitation squads to go all over, which were supervised by a non-commissioned officer of the regiment, although probably the people doing the actual work were the natives. But they was all supervised. And they used to come around every quarter, because take Lucknow, our toilets used to be buckets. There wasn't water laid on. There weren't water lavatories. And natives used to come and take those buckets out twice a day. And all supervised by a non-commissioned officer of the regiment. Very, very clean.
Did you or your family ever fall sick in India?
Not with any serious illness. No, never. And as I say, I had went to India with a baby, and I had two sons born in Kalana, 7,500 feet up, and none of them ever bothered with anything. I know there is a lot of dysentery and all that goes about India, but they never got it. Half of that is because people don't use clean receptacles. But if you looked after yourself, you keep clear of it. I keep clear of it as well.
Did you boil all your water?
Yes. And we always do, we always, except, well, if we happen to go anywhere where it need to be boiled, they tell you. and mainly we always boiled it and kept it. Well, my wife was very careful that way.
What about the schooling for your children?
Well, there was military schools for children run by young ladies who were school teachers. I mean, come out to England to do the proper school teaching for them. And the boys, they'd probably be under an army educational corps sergeant or WO. In some cases they weren't, in some cases they were done by a mistress. But because the army itself had its own schools as well for the troops, who had to attend school unless they'd got their second class certificate. But after they'd got their third class and second class certificate, they could stay if they want to and go on in the evenings, not during working hours, and study for the first or special certificate of education. And you could not get WO in those days, warrant officer, unless you had your first class certificate.
Were you satisfied with the schooling which your children got in India?
I was very, very satisfied with my education my children got in India and at home in the army. In fact, my wife, when we came home to Beverley, we sent one of my sons down to my parents at the Old Ford because she was going into a hospital to have another baby. And my mother took my son to the local school at Redbridge. 2 or 3 days afterwards, one of the teachers, Amy Saville, who I know has gone by, came and visited my mother. She said, "The boy you brought to school, Mrs. Finch, Stanley Finch, is it your Stanley's son?" Because she knew me, you see. She said, "Yes, he was born in India." She says, "I've come to see you about it. He's so far in advance of my pupils, I think he should go to college. Have you any objection to me putting him in for it?" My mother said, "No." She said, "My son will be pleased." And this school teacher at Ilford sent him to Beals College. And from Beals College he went to near Reading, where they was sent during the war. And he was down and he went to Bill's College then for the remainder of his education. And that's, his grounding was all army. So I think it's a good proof that the army education was very good for children.
What type of things did you and your wife and children do as a family in your spare time? Did you go off together?
Yes, and of course there was always ordinary dances, sons miss dances and all that, and also miss dances. And then we used to go out shopping together and all over. I mean, your life, really, once you finished training for the day and went home, was like any other civilian. You could go practically where you want to. You weren't tied in any shape or form. The only tie-in, really, in some places, you had to be in barracks. If you were in barracks by midnight or something like that.
Did you go off on picnics and things like
that? Oh, yes. Yes, in fact, the whole... Probably old no quarters go together, you know, arrange one. They had very well organized things like that for them. Very good.
But did you go off just by yourselves as a family on a picnic into the
countryside? Sometimes to the countryside, and sometimes we went, as I say, all together. No, there was you just the same as what you were really in civil life.
How much of the Indian countryside did you see?
Oh, I saw more than most because I travelled so much. When I was a brigade quartermaster sergeant, I travelled all over. And I sometimes was in charge probably of a camp for a few weeks and probably no troops in it. And I had nothing else to do but wander around the countryside with a gun under my arm and, you know, looking out for a fox as I have done before today. And I had a very, very happy time in India, I must say. Although I was away from my family when I was there, but I was enjoying myself.
So you often went out shooting, did you?
Oh, yes. Yes, even when we were in the hills, in the foothills of the Himalayas, as he called it. We're now shooting there. The pheasants and different things. I know, I'll give you one story. The man that used to look after the camp, he used to stay up there all winter. And he said one night, just before we went up there, one April, his wife had woke him up. They'd been out night into Chakrata, the other side of the hill. Come back, and he was tired, went to bed. And he had a window he could open, and he had a trap to put a bait on for wild animals. And he said he'd come back this night after the being in Chakrata. Woman asleep, gone to bed and fell asleep, and his wife would come up, there's something in the trap. Oh, he said, leave it. No, no, she said, it's kicking up a row. He said, he just opened the door, put his gun through the fire, and went back to bed. Next morning when he had a look, he had a... Excuse me. Small wild animal, smaller than a tiger. Panther. There was a panther dead on his trap, and he hadn't even seen it. Yes.
Did you have any trouble with wild animals yourself?
No, never. Never in trouble. As I say, once I got frightened with a... sat down on a wall at Killarnon, I had a rustle, and when I looked down, there was a large python, and I ran for about 10 yards, but that's the only time I've ever been nervous of a wild animal. I hadn't seen it there. It had been laying there while I was sitting on the wall.
Didn't you say that you spent several hours destroying some bats on one occasion?
Oh, yes. In Killarna, we were in our house was on the end, and gone to bed for the first night there, and wondered what the noise was flying around in the bedroom. So put a light on, and there were bats flying around. So my wife got up and took the baby in a cot into the kitchen and shut the door, and it took me about 4 hours standing on the end of the bed with a tennis racket trying to hit these bats when they were flying, and it was 4 hours before I killed the last one.
Can you tell me what your daily routine was in India? Can you take me through a typical day, what time you would get up and what you would do?
Well, normally get up in the summertime, when it was hot, it was about 5 o'clock. In the wintertime, it was 6. And used to go, I'd have a cup of tea at home and then go over to the company. And we'd have half an hour's physical training. Then we'd go away, get dressed, go for breakfast, and I'd go home and go to breakfast. And we'd pray again at 9 o'clock. And a couple of hours either musketry training and drill. Or it could be judging distance, cross-country, certain things like that. You had a training program. But you used to finish always by, especially in the summertime, by 12 o'clock. And the afternoons, you very seldom did anything, unless you had to. And, of course, there were sentries on duty, of course. And you played games after tea. Either football, hockey mainly, and things like that. And then, of course, in the evenings, after 8 o'clock, probably you went into your mess or the canteen if you was a corporal or private, billiards, snooker, something like that. Because it all used to be billiards in those days. But, of course, there's no billiards hardly now played, is there?
Did organisations like the Salvation Army provide services in India?
No. The only time I saw Salvation Army provide a service for the army was in Ireland. At Mullingar. But we never had any Salvation Army visit us ever.
When you played sport, you told me that you played hockey against Indian teams. Did sport bring you into contact with civilians, I mean white civilians in India? Could you play against those teams?
Yes, because wherever you go, say, same as in China, there was always businessmen or people out there with English businesses and English people. don't matter what station you went to, you'd run across some. And they were very good to the soldiers, all those sort of people were. Very good.
What type of jobs did they do, these European civilians?
I think it's mainly to do with probably the furs or anything like that of the animals of that country, or the produce, which was any produce that happens to be coming to England.
So they were mostly business people?
Yes, all business people, oh yes. Yes.
Did you ever come across missionaries or?
Very few.
Civil servants?
Very few, very few. They seem to, the missionaries seem to be mainly with the people of the country in which we were serving.
What was life like for the married women on the cantonment?
Well, they used to seem to get on very well, because you always had the odd one, but as normally they used to seem to get on very well. And of course we used to have functions as well, bus drives and all like that for them. And as a whole, the married families were very, very good together, I will say, especially when they were so far from home. And you'd always hear the ladies say about they'd received a letter from somebody at home, or received a letter from probably somebody in the regiment who was in the other battalion at home, or somewhere else. You see, we had two battalions in those days, the 1st and 2nd battalion. And you'd probably, if you come home from the 1st battalion, you'd go to the 2nd battalion. And then you'd hear the conversation, and you know that they'd had a letter from the lady of the other battalion.
Didn't they ever get bored, though, the ladies? I mean, they had servants to help them, so they wouldn't.
I didn't think they used to make, they used to make it up very well and take the children out more than what they would have done if they'd been at home.
Can I ask you about your work as an NCO in charge of the men in India? Were there any special discipline problems you had to
deal with? Well, no, I was as I say, I was a platoon sergeant while I was in India. One time I was employed with a brigade, I'll admit, and away from it, and I had to leave it to my corporal. But I had never any problems, and I had one of the finest platoons anybody could wish to have. And especially in sporting line, and I never had any bother with her. And I still, I've even now, near where I live, there's a fellow who comes across the road every time he sees me in town, who was in my platoon in North China in 1925 to 1927, my name Robinson. He comes across there and is pleased to see me as if yesterday. And I was a sergeant and he was a private. I've never had any bother all the time. You do hear people talking about it, but I never had any bother all the time with soldiers. Never.
Didn't you? Wasn't there a problem with the soldiers getting bored? Didn't you have a problem trying to keep them occupied?
No, no, not at all. Not at all. I never found that, because we always used to have a full life. We did, really. And of course, I mean, when they was off parade, I was off parade, so you knew what was going on. And even on a Saturday afternoon, when sometimes, which would be the main time, if any of them would get bored or sit in the line about, some would go into town or the local town or villages. But you always used to find something. Because if he was in India in the afternoons, they wanted to lay down more than anything else because of the heat.
What about the question of women with these men? Did you have to stop them using brothels and things like this in India?
We never had any brothels in India.